Hey y'all, Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze.
Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Oh, good morning. Hello. Hello, hello, hello. Good morning. James Hamm is there. I'm Kyle Madsen. Jiffy Lube, omnipresent. They sponsor the program, and we are the Insiders. We're rocking with you until noon right here on ESPN 1320. If you're listening on the radio, hello and good morning. We appreciate you so much. If you're watching on YouTube, and are we back on Twitch? We are back on Twitch. If you're watching on YouTube and Twitch, youtube.com/ESPN1320, twitch.tv/ESPN1320, hello and good morning. If you're listening on the free Odyssey app, thank you. Hello. If you're not on the free Odyssey app and you've not downloaded it yet, go ahead and do so. Favorite ESPN 1320. That makes us look good. And if you're a podcast listener, if you're listening on the James Hamm and Kyle Madsen Show podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts, thank you to you as well. I'm going to start with the good stuff.
Uh-oh.
Because the vibes are up. I'm having a hard time being optimistic about the game last night.
Okay.
So I'm going to start with the things I liked, and I'm going to start with the good stuff, and then I'll be more of a bummer. DeMar DeRozan was unbelievable.
Yeah, that was wild.
42 points, and as somebody who has on this show and on various social media advocated for Keon Ellis starting and DeMar DeRozan being your sixth man, it's like games like last night happen where it's really, it gets, and I think if you take a more kind of bigger view, it's that still makes sense, and I'm not moving off the take because of that, but there's a really strong argument in favor of DeMar DeRozan playing as many minutes as humanly possible when he does what he does last night, where he's just an unstoppable scorer.
Yeah, there's always these moments where he just like becomes old school DeMar DeRozan, and you know, I think for me it happened in the second quarter when he really started to cook. He had 7 points in the first quarter, and it was just like one of some dudes in the second quarter, in the first quarter, right? So he led the team with 7 points, but that second quarter he goes for 14, and he single-handedly like willed the Kings back into the game. Yep. And for me, you know, they finish half tied at 61, and without him they probably would have been down 10 and maybe more. And it was his ability to just score in, you know, outside of the normal you know, offense. But I will say this, they called plays for him. And it was like, hey, we're going to get the ball to DeMar for like 10 consecutive plays. And he just answered every single time. And I was really impressed to see that they actually rode the hot hand. It was like, hey, like, it's a thing.
Yep.
Like, a player gets hot, you feed him. You just keep feeding him.
And that's where we talk about like the one-on-one scoring ability of Zach LaVine and Malik Monk and DeMar DeRozan. And how valuable it is to have that. I think sometimes it can gum up your offense, but then there's nights like last night where nothing's really working, you're struggling on the road, and you know what? Having a 35-year-old who's built an entire career out of just doing this and backpacking a team and saying, hey, DeMar, it's you right now. Don't worry about fitting other people into the offense. We're not going to have Malik Monk orchestrating everything and hopefully getting the ball to you. Like, nope, it's just you. And that's where I think there's a ton of value in having a player like that. I think on making it your offense, I don't think is going to win you a lot of games. It's probably going to make you very, very mid. But in special instances like last night, because every game is its kind of own organism, right? I think that was the right thing to do, especially when he's going to hit shots at the rate he did. What did he finish? 15 of 22 and 4 of 6 from 3?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, man, get in the basketball. Let him cook.
Yeah, and I also thought that last night, I think the Kings they're trying. So first of all, they've had no practice time since the trades, right? So Like, just trying to integrate these players in without any practice time is extremely difficult. I like that they were able to run some ISO plays specifically where it wasn't like, hey, the ball's moving, and then stop.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it's like jarring. This was like, hey, we're going to feature you. We're going to feature you on the block, and you're going to go to work, and we're going to see how it's not the block. It's more like the mid-range on the block.
Free throw line extended, kind of.
Yeah, I don't even know how to describe it. It's like in that area between the corner three and the block.
It's on the baseline.
Yeah, sort of on the baseline. They're just like, hey, we're going to feature you right here. I was okay with that. But I also, the things that I kind of liked was, I don't know if you can convert him into an off-ball moving, just back-cutting machine,
mm-hmm.
but getting Zach LaVine in motion was spectacular. Like, first of all, he gets a couple of baskets at the rim. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden, the alley-oops were unbelievable because they're alley-oops in the half court.
The one Malik threw to him, Malik let that go, I was like, whoop, that's in the 10th row.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when he threw it, I audibly went, ah.
Yeah.
And then, nope, LaVine gets up, catch, throw down.
I had looked away, and my son, like, screamed. I'm like, what just happened? I'm like, oh.
He threw it so high.
Yeah, it was really wild. But if you can get him in that kind of motion,
yes.
And then when he takes a three, it's not that big of a deal. We'll figure that out. We'll get to that here in a minute. But I feel like there's a different way to use Zach LaVine than even the Kings used, like, De'Aaron Fox in the past.
If you're able to, I think if you're trying to maximize, not necessarily Zach LaVine, the individual, but if you're trying to maximize the Kings offense, I think that's Zach LaVine's role.
Yeah, it has
to be. His primary role. There's going to be times where he'll have the ball in his hands and he's going to create for you. But if he can be that electric, athletic cutter, spot-up shooter, mm-hmm. and again, he's going to have the ball in his hands a little bit. I'm not saying never have him dribble the ball.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of maximizing. If that's the large portion of his offensive output, that's where, okay, that's one less player that you have to worry about making sure he has the ball in his hands to score.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what DeMar DeRozan needs. That's what Malik Monk needs. If you can have somebody who's now cutting and being a dangerous spot-up shooter,
yeah,
that's I think,
well, and
where
having,
he can be really helpful.
Having the defense chase him. You know, I think that's a big part of it. Like, if you have to have your eyes on where Zach LaVine is the whole time because of the lob threat mm-hmm. or because he could be coming off a screen and popping a three, like, those are things where all of a sudden it makes your offense look much different.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that they can find that because, like, look, we talked about it forever, how dangerous Kevin Huerter was because of his off-ball movement. Mm-hmm. Now, the fact that he stopped hitting threes made him, like, way, way less dangerous. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he can't go and elevate and do what Zach LaVine can do as an offensive player going to the basket, yep. it changes things as well. So, yeah, I'm here to see, like, the evolution and how they coach this thing, really, because I think you do have to, at this point, you probably have to take some of that, like, read and react and say, hey, we need you guys to run this play.
Yeah.
You know, and so I'm hoping that's what we're going to see, a little bit of tweaks here, where they're actually calling stuff in like game action.
I think my favorite thing about the end of the game last night was just really high-level players making high-level shots.
Mm-hmm.
You had the sick Kyrie Irving layup that gave Dallas the lead with 15 seconds left.
With like he cut through three Kings. Like, they're all over him.
And that's just Kyrie.
Yeah,
like,
is.
That's not... I'm not going to look at this and go, see, that's the roster. Like, no, man, sometimes it doesn't matter with Kyrie Irving.
Mm-hmm.
He's just going to make the shot, and there's nothing you can do about it. But then DeMar DeRozan comes back, hits a jumper to tie it. It sends it to OT. In OT, you had the Malik Monk offensive rebound off the missed free throw.
Oh, yeah.
And then circling back in and scoring. Was that in OT or?
That was in overtime.
Yeah, that was. Okay, that was in overtime. That was unbelievable. The Klay Thompson three to give Dallas the lead was just vintage,
mm-hmm.
and then vintage DeMar on the other end. As a person watching that game outside of fandom, that was just excellent basketball down the
stretch. It was riveting.
It was so good. And I said that online, and a bunch of people who are Kings fans are like, no, I was having a heart attack.
Yeah.
I understand. Totally. And I get it. If you come out on the other side of that game, it's like, oh, man, that was so much fun. But in the moment, it's like, whew, it's terrifying.
I know. I tweeted Klay Thompson buries the three, Kings down 128-127. With whatever was left.
10 seconds
left. And some guy tweeted back, why don't you tweet all the good stuff that happens too? And I'm like, have you not been following my Twitter feed the entire... Like, I am typing about as fast as you can humanly type while live tweeting a game.
Yeah.
Like, keeping up with that was wild. Like, yeah. Just absolutely wild. So, yeah. It's just high-level basketball.
Yeah, really, really enjoyed, just as a from a basketball standpoint, had a really fun time watching that game. On the other hand, I'm having a really hard time being super optimistic about the Kings.
In general?
Yes.
Okay.
Because you needed to win last night. And I saw some people in the chatty house at youtube.com/ESPN1320. Saw some people saying, hey, like, a win is a win is a win. We'll take it. And we talked about on this show the necessity of winning last night. So from the game-to-game slog of the schedule, last night was huge. Mm-hmm. Needed to win. You get an overtime victory on the road. But then I think back on the way we kind of viewed Dallas going into the game, going, hey, they're super banged up. Their only big is Daniel Gafford. And then Daniel Gafford gets hurt in the second quarter?
Yeah, I think it was the second quarter. We haven't heard an update that I've seen, but that did not look good.
It really didn't. I didn't even see what happened initially.
Yeah.
And on the replay, he just got his knee. It was that knee bend that you go, oh, the fact that that hurt that bad can't be good news.
No. I mean, he buckled in, and Malik, that wasn't anything malicious. Malik was literally trying to use his knee as like a leverage point. You can see his leg and just kind of jump the route, and he just caught him the wrong way. Yeah, really a bummer.
Yeah. Nothing happened last night outside of DeMar DeRozan just going old school classic DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah, going plaid.
Yeah, that made me think, oh, okay, they're starting to figure it out. If he has 28 last night, they lose comfortably.
Yeah. No,
and that's where, and maybe it's just a Tuesday and I'm being a jerk, but my takeaway from last night was, hey, they turned the ball over 20 times. Their bench got outscored 64-26. The Mavs didn't have a big, and the Kings needed 42 from DeMar DeRozan and overtime to win. Like, my God, dude. Like, everything is so difficult. It's like we talked about with the 49ers early in last season. Mm-hmm. Like, God, even when they win, it seems like every game they're climbing uphill. That's what it feels like with the Kings right now for me.
No, I get that, but I would also say, like, look, this is a team that, you know, they're playing, what is it, their fourth game in six nights.
Mm-hmm.
They've had zero practice time with you trading your best player and inserting other pieces.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't had time to get Valanciunas and Sabonis on the floor together. And then you just said, okay, things aren't going well. Let's just try it.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked. Like, there are things that I would like to just say, hey, you're a mess. But I also want to see what they look like coming out of the All-Star break when they've had at least two or three days to work on some things. But again, like, look, they played tonight. They played last night. They have today where they're flying to New Orleans, and then they play a back-to-back against New Orleans, and then it's the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. Like, there is no quality time to get on the court, and even, like, walkthroughs, that's what you're trying to do. And I know Doug talked about this the other day. It's just like, hey, we don't have time to, like, institute, like, offenses. We just have time to, like, basically work on our flow. Like, everybody move here.
Right,
this is where you're going. And, you know, almost like you just run drills where guys are running in circles around cones because you're doing a shoot around and that's all you can do. So I think there is a lot of, like, weirdness to this. And I know that people aren't happy that, you know, you squeak by. But in the NBA, I do agree a win is a win. And I would much rather be here today, you know, talking about how they had to struggle to win a game and saying that they've got time to, you know, figure things out here in the next 10 days where they'll have some time off. But also, like, yeah, they've got to be better. They've got to be better. They've got to shoot the ball better. They can't go through an entire half where Keegan Murray doesn't take a single shot and then scores 11 points in the third quarter and then doesn't get another opportunity. Like, those things can't keep happening. But at the same time, I'm looking at the game. I'm like, hey, you figured out a way. You stayed above 500. You got a game up on 500. You're still the, 8-9 seed in the Western Conference?
Nine,
yeah. You clawed within a half game of Dallas. You're, two games, two and a half behind the 7-8 seed? Like, there are things that are, or 6-7 seed. There are things that are good. It just doesn't look right yet, and I think that's to be expected.
Is it going to look right to the tune of them going 20-9 over their next 29 games?
Oh, I don't think so. But
that's what they would need to do to get one more win than they had last year.
I mean, maybe
that gets you to 47-35 is going 20-9 the rest of the way.
Yeah, you don't want to look at the advanced numbers for what their stats for the like. I looked at the last 15.
Let's hang on. Let's put a pin in that. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about Zach LaVine's shooting. He's been struggling to shoot the ball. Is that a regression? Is there something more to it? I want to get into that as well. Domantas Sabonis still not in the All-Star game. And some insane box scores from around the NBA last night. But before we do any of that, why don't you tell us about what Jiffy Lube's got going on in February?
Yeah, Jiffy Lube wants to show some serious customer love this month with their February oil change deals you can find online. Simply visit JiffyLube.com and find a service center near you to see these sweetheart deals on oil changes, wiper blades, and more during the month of February. So drive into savings at JiffyLube.com today and save in the month of February.
Love it. Shout out to Jiffy Lube. They sponsor this show. There's going to be more of this show coming up next. Can James talk me into being optimistic about the Kings? We'll find out. Here on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Leader.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
James is there, I'm Kyle. One of the pitfalls of doing a show without a producer is we have to try and figure out news on the fly. So did Reggie Jackson sign with the Warriors or not?
I don't know. Somebody asked that in the chat.
Oh, okay. And did Alex Len sign with the Lakers or not?
Well, I think Alex Len was supposed to sign with the Pacers, but then when the deal for Mark Williams fell through, maybe he backed out? I don't know.
I don't either. I'm checking the internet now.
Yeah.
Because this is what we have to do. I'm not seeing any Alex Len news.
No.
He and the Lakers have mutual interest.
Oh, that's usually a good sign. Good for Alex.
Yeah.
Well, that, I mean, they have a need. They have a need for a tall person.
Yeah, they do.
So, especially after
a tall person
Williams.
Who can effectively play basketball.
Yeah. Well,
or at least run around for a couple of minutes and be tall.
Or at least be tall. Yeah.
Is he better than Jackson Hayes?
Well, so I think Jackson Hayes actually can have like a really nice revitalization of his career here because of Luka. Luka loves like the pure rim runner guy. I mean, that's all they collected in Dallas. So yeah, I don't know. I also the Charlotte Hornets have contacted the NBA to explore options about the dispute, the disputed physical of Mark Williams. Like, good luck with that. First of all, that's not going anywhere. Secondly, that's why you don't wait until the last second, because they could, the Lakers may have taken that deal if they would have like said, oh, we'll take the pick swap out of the deal.
Right.
But because the deal's already called in one way, you can't change it after the deadline. And Charlotte's like, oh, you know, they failed a physical. Like, just so you know, everyone in the league on the backside of the league, like, absolutely knows that Mark Williams doesn't practice, can hardly get through games because of his back. And he's like 22 years old.
And he's had back and foot, and I think there was a knee in there.
Yeah.
He's had multiple injuries.
He misses a ton of games, and he has problems that I don't know that can be fixed. And so when you go trade a kid like that, and knowing how much you're going to have to pay him very soon, Mm-hmm. It is not surprising that he failed a physical. Like, a lot of people around the league were like, oh, yeah, well, that's going to be a tough one to get through a physical. And yeah. That's why you don't make a deal like that right on the deadline.
It's got to be awkward for Dalton Connect.
I love that.
Going back into the locker room, like, all right, well, I'm back.
The AI generated.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they just cracked
the video.
Videos that go out.
That's dangerous, bro.
It is dangerous. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Mark Williams has played 25 minutes a game this year. He's only been able to suit up for 23 games.
Jeez Louise.
Again, I really like him as a player, but.
Right. In theory, when he was getting traded to the Lakers, it's like, oh, my God, I can't believe that guy. It's like, is he going to play?
He's in his third season. He's at 85 games played.
Come on, man.
Total.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Want to stick on the Kings game real quick before we move into some other stuff. I like the two big lineup with Sabonis and Valanciunas.
I do too. I mean, it's going to have its time and its place.
Yeah, that's the thing is I think it can't be a regular part of the rotation because there are going to be teams that just cook that and they're going to make it be a problem. But like you said, in situations last night where you're down, what were they, down 11 or 12 when they put that duo on the court against a team that didn't have anyone big enough to either guard them or keep them off the glass. Valanciunas had 6 offensive boards last night. The Mavs as a team had 5.
He was just taller.
It wasn't like he was in there like, oh man, he's moving. It was just, no, he was just putting his hands up and catching the ball and putting it back.
It was like when you watch like U8 rec league basketball, but there's one kid who's halfway through puberty.
6'1".
Everyone else is still not even 4 feet tall. Yeah. And then there's one kid who's 5'6". And you're like, what is happening? And he just stands above everybody and he keeps throwing up and all the other kids are like trying to jump and snack at him.
That's literally what it looked like.
Yes, it did.
So I think there's times for it. And I think just having that option is helpful.
Oh yeah,
it's just a little bit different look you can throw because we talked. I feel like the phrase I used more than any other over the last year and a half or so has been like different clubs in the bag or different pitches, and that's just a different club in your bag.
Mm-hmm.
You might only use it for 3 or 4 minutes, but if you can get an effective 3 or 4 minutes out of a two big lineup, that's something that not a lot of teams can do. It's something not a lot of teams can combat, and it just gives you options.
Well, that, and I think out of that lineup, you can also run Keegan as a huge small forward.
Yeah.
Like in that type of lineup where it's like, okay, how are you going to deal with the Kings overall like height? Like how are you? And I love watching Valanciunas play. Like
he's a good player.
You know, again, like watching him on the opposition has always been tough because he batters your players.
Mm-hmm.
But like watching guys run into the key and think they're going up for a layup and he's standing there and they literally just bounce off and fall down.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the funnest things to watch because you're like, man, what were you thinking?
So that's when he's picking up fouls left and right like he did at the end of last night.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Give me some verticality, dog.
No, I got it.
Here we go. The Valanciunas at the 5, Domas at the 4, Trey Lyles at the 3.
Oh, yeah.
Keegan at the 2.
Okay. And Zach LaVine at the 1.
Zach LaVine at the 1. Come on.
6'6", Zach LaVine at the 1.
Come on. All of a sudden, the Kings are super tall. Speaking of Zach LaVine.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about his shooting. He's 5 of 26 with the Kings. That's 19.2% for those of you trying to do the quick math. I think what's happening is it's not, I saw somebody making the joke in the chatty house, like, oh, he's paying the Kings tax. He got to the Kings and immediately can't shoot. No, I think what's happening is it's just bad timing and he's regressing to his career mean a little bit because he was shooting, what, 44.2% when he got to the Kings?
Something like that.
On the season. And he's a 38.2% shooter for his career.
Yeah,
so he's struggling a little bit. He's down to 42.6%. I at some point it's going to level out at probably somewhere around 41 or 40%. And he's going to start knocking down some threes. I'm not concerned at all.
Yeah, I'm not concerned at all either. And as much as it's regression to the mean, it's also learning how to play with Domas.
Sure.
And it's learning how to play with Malik. And, you know, just like the overall feel of this team, it's different. And when you get into a new situation and like factor in that he had taken like 9 days off before that because of the birth of his daughter, like he got to the Kings, he hadn't played basketball. He wasn't on the court a bunch for like over a week.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you get to Sacramento and all of a sudden it's like everything is new, all the people are new. And hey, there's expectations because you just replaced mm-hmm. the franchise guy.
Yeah.
You know, I think it can get a little overwhelming at times, and I expect him to settle in. As soon as they figure out like the sweet spot to find him for a pass,
mm-hmm.
where he likes, you know, like how he likes his screen set, how Domas sets screens, all of these things, they'll figure it out, and I think he'll jump right back up. I don't know.
So you're
44%.
Coming around on Zach LaVine then?
Well, I've always said Zach LaVine as an offensive player is very good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And there are moments where on ball defense, he's okay as well.
Yeah.
They're also like already where you've seen like the Olay plays or the he looks one way and the guy back cuts him so bad that, you know, it's just a wide open. And that's, again, why Domantas Sabonis has had foul trouble.
Mm-hmm.
It's why some of the other bigs have had foul trouble because the perimeter defense has not been good. It's not been consistent, and guys have been getting downhill on their bigs and getting them in foul trouble nonstop. So, like, look, it's going to be a work in progress, but I don't expect Zach LaVine in his 11th season to become a lockdown defender out of nowhere when he hasn't been, you know, the previous, you know, 10 plus seasons.
Yeah, effort, I think, is going to be more the calling card there than him turning into Keegan Murray defensively.
No, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I asked that a little bit, though, because when I said they'd have to go 20-9 to eclipse last year's win total, that's where they're at. So they're 27-26.
Okay.
They have to go 20-9 over their final 29 games. And I think there's little to no chance of that. You seem more optimistic.
Well,
what is it about the Kings right now?
No,
How's you believing they can go 20-9?
I don't think that they. I don't know that they can go 20-9. I mean, what is that? That's 11 games over .500. I don't expect them to be a team that's 11 games over .500 in the second half at all. Like, I think they're closer to a 500 team over the second half, and I do think that they'll have a tough time getting to 46 wins. They might be able to get to 43, 44. And they might be able to find some sort of lightning in a bottle here, especially if they can get momentum.
Mm-hmm.
But all of it has to happen right now. This is a soft spot in the schedule where you get, you know, a couple of games against New Orleans. You come out of the break. You got to
Utah and Charlotte.
Yeah, Utah, Charlotte. You got some winnable games, right?
Yeah.
That's when you have to take advantage and start building and get, you know, as far over 500 as possible. But 10 games over 500 is going to be sort of like where I would look at this team. And even that, I don't know if they can get to 10 games over 500. They're one game over 500 right now.
Yeah.
And if you can get to that 10, I mean, that means that they're 9 games over .500 from here on out. So what is that? 19 and 10?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're going to have a tough time getting there. I don't know. Like, I want to see, but I will tell you this, like, the advanced stats over the last 2 weeks are not good at all. And I don't know if it's because of
like
the
how
chaos.
Not good.
Horrific, actually.
Oh.
Like, you don't even want to know what the...
Well, I would love to know.
You would love to know?
I would love to know the context.
Well, I think it's like we do this all the time where we talk about their offensive rating and defensive rating and stuff like that, right? And I think like during the good times, it's fine to point it out. But also during the bad times, like, hey, you need to look at the offensive rating and the defensive rating. Over their last 10 games, the Kings have an offensive rating of 112.7, which is 27th. And no, that's not. It is...
what are we looking for?
Their offensive rating is 112.7, which is 20th in the NBA. Their defensive rating over the last 10 games is a 120.8.
Ooh.
A 120.8. They're a net rating of -8.2 over their last 10 games, which is 27th in the league.
And just for in case anybody's not familiar, offensive rating is an estimation of how many points you score over 100 possessions.
Yes.
Defensive rating is how many points you give up over 100. Net is offense minus defense.
Yes. So a -8.2, which means that...
Not
the
great.
The fact that they're 4-6 is actually pretty stunning.
That's impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, because they realistically should be 2-8 or 1-9 over that stretch, just looking at offensive rating versus defensive rating. And it's not good. And over the last 15, it looks very similar to that. It's not quite as bad, but it looks very similar to that. and they've got to figure out what is going on here. And not only that, they've got to get some practice time. So I don't want to say on one hand, like a win is a win and they haven't practiced, but then, hey, their offensive rating, defensive rating. Like, look, this team just went through a trauma.
Mm-hmm.
They did. And that's what you're kind of feeling. The fact
multiple.
That, yeah. The fact that you're 4-6 over that stretch, it might even be admirable that you're 4-6, like where your best player basically tells everybody he wants out. Or makes it pretty well known, and everyone in the locker room stops talking to him, at least on like a daily basis, where one of his best friends, Malik Monk, hadn't even discussed the whole entire situation with him. You know, then you go through the trade and new guys coming in the door and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think at the end of the day, like, they'll get through it, they'll figure it out. But I'd also point out that I think Doug, through a very difficult time, is kind of done a good job of keeping this team afloat, because this isn't like coaching 101. This is like master's or PhD level coaching during one of the most, you know, crazy times in this franchise's history is since they've been in Sacramento, where your star player asks out or you know, gets traded, like has all this drama surrounding him and gets traded over the course of, you know, while you're like 20 games into a new head coach's first run as a head coach.
One, from what I understand, this goes back to when Mike Brown was let go. Because at that point, that was when your star player, De'Aaron Fox, said, I don't want to be here anymore.
Well, your star player had made it very clear to the team that they wanted Mike Brown as his head coach,
right,
and did not want to play for another head coach. So when they traded him, they understood when they fired Mike Brown, they understood full well that meant that De'Aaron Fox no longer wanted to be in Sacramento.
So you're dealing with the head coaching change while also having your best player probably checked out a little bit.
Well, that, and I don't know that they had gone to the team and said, hey, if we fire Mike, De'Aaron's going to want out, so hold on, everybody. It's going to get a little crazy.
Yeah.
I think that it wasn't widely known.
Sure.
But it was definitely known between the player and the front office.
Yeah, no, I and what I'm saying is,
yeah,
while dealing with the tumult that comes with a coaching change, they're, whether beknownst to the team or not, they were running out a point guard who may or may not have been all here.
Yes.
And playing with that, again, whether they knew it or not.
Yeah.
So this goes, the trauma you talk about, like organizationally, not necessarily personally, but the trauma you talk about goes back to mid-December or late December, I guess, when Mike Brown got let go.
Oh yeah.
And I don't know. I think what we're looking at is a combination of all of that stuff from December through the trade deadline that just kind of accumulated and started weighing on people. You've got a coaching change. You've got three new rotation players? Valanciunas, Laravia, and
Levine.
While removing a franchise staple in the face of your franchise
and
in that process.
Your highest usage player that you have,
yes,
like a usage player around 30.
Right.
Which that matters. You take out a high usage player that has the ball in his hands, that is directing traffic the whole time, that's drawing a huge crowd and the whole spray three. Like, De'Aaron Fox should be averaging eight and a half assists a game, but his shooters couldn't shoot at all this season, so he's averaging six.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how bad it was, but it doesn't matter. The fact is that De'Aaron Fox is a guy who's breaking down the defense time and time and time again. Now you need other players to try to break down the defense the same way, and it's just not the same.
It's a lot to overcome. So I wouldn't... there's some good news, though. The Oklahoma City Thunder 2 years ago, we were talking about the Kings going 19-10 to get to last year's win total, because last year's win total got you the 9 seed. 2 years ago, do you remember what the 10 seed was 2 years ago?
Oh, it was under 500, right?
It was Oklahoma City at 40-42.
Oh, yeah.
And it looks like we're headed toward a season, maybe not that dramatic,
but close.
But something close to it.
Yeah, it might be 500, maybe a game or two over 500 is the 10th seed.
So we can talk about 20-9 and can you go 20? It's like probably not. But can you be a couple of games over? Can you ensure that you're in the play-in? And maybe by the time the play-in rolls around, maybe you've started to figure some things out, and maybe can you be dangerous at that point? That's kind of, I think, where this is heading. Like, if there's an optimistic view, that's it to me. Where, hang around 500, can you get a couple of games over? Can you get 3-4 games over?
Mm-hmm.
And go into a play-in scenario where all of a sudden we're on the radio going, wow, Zach LaVine's spot has really been cemented in this offense. The rotation looks great. Jake LaRavia has been super impactful. The two big lineup, they're deploying it here and there, and it's working great. And oh my God, look at the Kings are figuring it out at the right time. That's, I think, where this is potentially headed. Way more than I think there's some run coming where they go 20-9 over their final 29 games.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree with you. 20-9. I mean, look at their schedule. Their schedule isn't easy either.
And I say I pick 20 wins because that gets them to one game better than they were last year.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So
I get you. I think even getting to, you know, the 46 wins, 45 wins, 44 might even be difficult. But we'll have to see. You know, I think at the end of the day, we can look at the advanced numbers all we want. Mm-hmm. The reason why they're 4-6 in that stretch is because the games that they have won, they've won with gutsy performances down the stretch. Yep. That you didn't expect. You know, like what you saw from DeMar DeRozan, and then what was the New Orleans game where they just kept fighting and they found, yep, a way to win at the end of games.
Minnesota.
Yeah. I'd say the good thing is that right now they're finding ways to win close games. They just have to be in more close games. Mm-hmm. They can't let, you know, things get out of control, and they've also shown an ability to come back in games where they do let things get out of control. So I think we're seeing a team that's trying to develop chemistry on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just why, like, firing a coach midseason, trading your best player midseason is not the recipe for winning. And that's why trying to get win now players while firing a head coach and trading your best player, mm-hmm, is not typically the smartest way to develop a long-term winner.
Yeah, it's really tough. Speaking of the West, I want to take a look around the West because it feels like there are some teams really hitting their stride right now.
Mm-hmm.
And an incredible box score from the Nuggets-Blazers game
crazy
last night. We'll get into all that. Plus, Domantas Sabonis didn't make the All-Star game. A shocker. We'll talk about that as well. He's James. I'm Kyle. We're the Insiders. Sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Leader. Now the voice guy is going to repeat me.
For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
James is over there. I'm Kyle. Talking about the Kings 129-128 overtime win over the Dallas Mavericks last night. The Kings, the Rockets, and the Mavericks are the only top 10 teams in the West that aren't above 500 over their last 10 games.
Mm.
It feels like the West is starting to hit its stride a little bit. Like, Oklahoma City's awesome, and they have been for a while. Memphis is hanging in there at the number two seed. But Denver, very quietly, winners of 6 in a row.
Mm.
Cruising.
Yeah, what Denver is doing right now is crazy. They're starting to look like a bit of a juggernaut. I don't know.
Yes. They beat the Blazers last night. And not that the Blazers are awesome, but the Blazers have been kind of rolling.
Okay, and you remember when the Kings played the Blazers, they flashed all the stats up on the screen. The Blazers had the number one defense in the NBA over the previous, mm-hmm, 10 games, right?
Yes.
Like, they were on fire defensively.
The Nuggets last night scored 146 points. They won 146-117. They scored 146 points in regulation on 8 made threes.
Yeah. This is wild.
They're cooking.
Like, everything about this box score is crazy.
Yeah.
And like some of the numbers, you said they shot 65.9% from the field. 65.9%.
For the game.
for the game.
They were 60 of 91 from the field.
Yeah. Kyle, they had 44 assists and 10 turnovers. A 4.4 to 1 ratio as a team.
Yeah.
44 assists is crazy. Points in the paint, 88 to 46.
88 points in the paint?
They outscored their opponent by 42 points and points in the paint.
Just in the paint.
That is absolutely fast break points, 29 to 12. Like that is one of the most dominating performances I have ever seen.
The Blazers won the 3-point line by 21 and they won the free throw line by 4. They outscored the Nuggets by 25 points at the free throw line and 3-point line combined and lost by 29.
Oh, that's wild. Yeah, like I listened to a clip from Michael Malone after the game, and he started going off because he seriously mentioned a player I'd never heard of before. So, and that was like the lead in with the tweet. Hey, Michael Malone says something about blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay.
Jalen Pickett?
Jalen Pickett. And I'm like, I don't know who Jalen Pickett is. Is Jalen Pickett real? So I clicked on the link and Mike started talking about like tonight, you know, we have 44 assists. And I'm like, wait, did he just say 44 assists? He's like, we had 88 points in the paint and we outscored him 88 to 46 in the paint. And I'm like, wait, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
I thought he was just making up numbers.
Right.
So I pull up the box score because I had just looked at the box score of the game, just cursory look, like, okay, that's a mollywhopping. I'm not going to like get all concerned about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But to hear the other stats were like, oh my, that is complete domination. Like, just crushed another team.
88 paint points by itself is crazy.
Just ridiculous.
I really enjoy the StatHead tool.
Yep.
And digging around in StatHead. And you put me onto this box score last night. And so I started doing some digging. The last time a team scored 146 or more points on 8 or fewer made threes was March 19th, 2010. Hadn't happened in 15 years. The Spurs beat the Warriors 147-116 on 6 made threes. The time it happened before that was March 15th, 2009, when the Suns hit 8 threes and beat the Warriors 154-130.
The Warriors were the common thread.
Warriors and Nuggets. So I just did a deep dive on this. That's now happened 91 times in NBA history.
Okay.
146 points on 8 or fewer made threes. It's happened 91 times now. The Nuggets and Warriors have accounted for 30 of them.
Oh, wow.
That's insane.
Yeah, especially, so the Nuggets in the 80s under what, under Doug Moe?
20% of the games all time like this were the 1980s Nuggets.
Yeah, yeah. And all they did was run up the score. It was like Alex English. They played no defense.
Yes.
Michael Adams averaging 30 a game. Like, it was wild. All they did was like hoist, 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 hoist. Like, they were running and gunning the entire game.
They had a game where they scored 184 points and lost.
In regulation or no?
No, I think it was OT.
Oh,
yeah. Is it one OT, I think, though?
It's like the 176-175 Kings win.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so crazy.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
184 points and catching an L.
That's wild.
Defense always optional. But no, man, like Denver suddenly... So OKC looks awesome. Denver looks really good all of a sudden. And it looks like more than just Jokic backpacking them. Christian Brown's starting to play better.
Oh, yeah.
Jamal Murray's always going to be a problem. Michael Porter Jr. is playing well. Aaron Gordon's back and healthy. Memphis is a little bit of a wild card. But like the Lakers dominated last night. In Luka's first game. Now, it was Utah. But I don't think there's a scenario where the Lakers get demonstrably worse toward the end of the year here.
Well, barring injury.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and I mean, when you're relying on a 40-plus-year-old LeBron James and Luka Doncic, who can never stay healthy, that's a problem. I will say this. Is Utah the most confusing team that you've ever seen?
Yes.
None of it makes sense.
I don't understand what they're doing.
Yeah. My son was like, hey, let's flip over the Utah Lakers game. I just want to watch and see what's happening. with Luka's whole first time, you know, playing. I'm like, okay. So we flick it on, and I'm like, they have like 27, 28-year-old forwards, and then Jordan Clarkson is like,
Jordan Clarkson is like 33,
and he's the dude handling the ball in the backcourt the entire time. And I'm like, what are they doing? Like,
Lauri Markkanen's running around.
They're just bad and not young, and even the young players they have, like, none of them have like made you like super convinced that they're going to be anything. And I guess they've got a bunch of draft picks coming up, so maybe they just hit it. But I don't get it at all. Even, you know, Walker Kessler. Like, I'm not convinced he's a starting NBA center, and you're just watching all of this. Like, this is chaos.
They're a weird team. Like,
they have absolutely no path at all.
Well, they have one path, and that's the Cooper Flagg path.
Yeah, capture the flag.
They are currently the top three teams have equal odds, right, of getting the one?
I think I think top three, top or, four three or four. I think it's four.
The top four teams right now are the Jazz, the Pelicans, the Hornets, and the Wizards.
Mm.
Portland's out. Portland has 23 wins.
Yeah, they just won 9 out of 10.
Portland and the Spurs have the same amount of wins.
Oh.
That's kind of wild. But Portland's out. Toronto might be out. They have 16. The Nets are out. They have 19.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah, but the top four, I mean, sometimes it works out that one of those teams gets the top pick, but a lot of times it's outside the top.
Yeah.
You know, it's a 6-7-8 that gets it. Yeah.
That would be annoying.
Yeah, it would be. Well, I mean, if you're that bad and then you, and like, I think with Utah, I think they're going to have multiple picks, right? They're going to have multiple opportunities because they've got so many picks, but I don't know. Like that. I'm just not convinced that their build is great. And we always talk about, oh, they got this for all this for Rudy Gobert, and they got all this for...
For what?
Yeah, but when you trade with really good players to good teams, and then they win a lot of games, your picks are not good. So it's like, okay, those Cavs picks that are, you know, like 27th, 28th in the draft, that's not exactly how you rebuild your franchise.
Elsewhere in the West, the Golden State Warriors and the Kings have matched results in the last six games. The Warriors tied the Kings when the Kings lost to Philly, and the Warriors beat somebody, I forget who.
Okay.
So that tied them with the Kings in the standings, but because the Kings own the season series right now, they're ahead. And they've just followed each other up and down the standings.
Yeah.
In the last six games.
Everyone wins, everyone loses, everyone wins, everyone loses.
Golden State looks way more, I don't know if they're going to be good, they look competent. With Jimmy Butler on the court.
Yeah, I know Steph has made 14 threes in the last two games. He's also scored something ridiculous like...
A 30-plus in the last three?
Yeah, he scored like, I want to say 72 points in 68 minutes or something over his last two. And he's saying, hey, it's just a lot easier when somebody else is drawing some of the attention. Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. 32,
37, 34, and 38 points in his last four games. The night he scored 32 was a loss to Utah. He was a minus 21.
Wow.
Oof. Yikes. But yeah, man, they just, I don't know. They beat Chicago and had a big comeback in that game. They beat Milwaukee last night. I don't know if they're going to be way better, but they're definitely more competent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think what is going to be helpful for them. But again, I don't think there's going to be some point where they dramatically separate themselves from Sacramento. I think they have a lot of the same problems.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, okay, on any night, you might go win, but out of 10 games, you might go 4-6, you might go 6-4, you might go 5-5. That's just kind of what it's going to be.
You're basically a 500 team.
Yep. Yep.
That's it.
I think that's where they're hanging out. The Suns, I think that's where the Suns are hanging out. I think there's going to be a race for those last two spots, maybe the last three spots, depending on what happens with Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Things might get ugly in Dallas, dude.
It's not good at all, Kyle.
We'll dive into what happened in Dallas last night, aside from the Kings win, but we'll also get back into the Kings win as well with James Hamm's six quick thoughts. All of that coming up in the second hour. He's James, I'm Kyle. We're the Insiders, and we're sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Theater.
Your
true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.